Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, friends, listen up. We're getting straight to the point with this one. We know how to make your holiday shopping way easier.
We know that sounds like a big promise, but just like you all, we're busy and the holiday season can be overwhelming. We'd never tease you with a big promise like that and not deliver.
So grab your holiday list, count the number of kids that you want to gift, and head to KiwiCo.com. You've heard us talking about how much we and our kids love KiwiCo, and this holiday season, we're getting serious with you. It's time to place some orders.
KiwiCo's fun-filled monthly crates include everything needed for screen-free, hands-on enrichment. They bring together creative play, STEM, geography, and even cooking activities in a line of subscription options for everyone from babies to toddlers and teens 16 and older. KiwiCo crates make amazing gifts for the kids in your life, including your own.
You know that we're partial to cooking. Lately, our families can't get enough of KiwiCo's Yummy Crate, which delivers high-quality kitchen tools, 3 recipes, and 2 projects every month geared towards kids ages 6 to 14. And before each crate arrives, you also get a shopping list that includes alternative ingredients to accommodate different diets from vegetarian to vegan.
But fear not if cooking isn't the thing that will spark excitement for the kids in your life. Through different seasons, our kids have loved the Kiwi Crate, Atlas Crate, and Tinker Crate, just to name a few. So be sure to check out all of KiwiCo's lines. There's something for every kid.
So go now. I mean, keep listening to us while you holiday shop. Didn't I just feed you listeners? Get 50% off their first month plus free shipping with the code DIJFY at KiwiCo.com.
That's 50% off your first month at KiwiCo.com. Promo code DIJFY, short for Didn't I Just Feed You?
And KiwiCo is the perfect gift for last minute gifting too. No shipping or wrapping required.
It is really hard taking care of your own kids and your parents and working a full-time job and feeling like you're not doing a good job at any of them. You know, there are just times you feel like I'm just failing at everything.
Welcome to Didn't I Just Feed You?
A podcast about feeding kids.
Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Stacy. Today's How We Feed episode comes from not just one, but 2 listener emails. We actually received them in the same week, which I think is really funny.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah, totally. And I have a feeling this is going to resonate with a lot of people. So sandwich generation families are families where the family cook is feeding their own kids and also their aging parents or in-laws or maybe even siblings at the same time. So today we're talking with Laura Mountain, who is just fabulous, a listener who reached out to us, who balances caring for her 2 teenage daughters and a toddler who live in her house with her, and then a whole bunch of other family members. She'll explain it. But we just want to say that obviously Laura's family has its own unique structure. Everybody who's going to listen to this has a different relationship with family, different levels of support, depending on number of siblings, cousins, however it works. But as we were talking to Laura, I realized that there's so much more that this is about feeding other people. This is about pitching in your community. This is about family. And also, you know, as young and healthy as the 2 grandmas in my family are, you know, something can happen and it can happen at any time. It's very unpredictable. So I felt like I could talk to Laura forever.
We were like, Laura, maybe you need your own podcast.
Yeah, we did.
And to your point, like the other listener email that we got from Katie May, her sandwich generation experience is a little bit different too, because the older folks that she's taking care of, adult folks that she's taking care of, are in her home versus Laura's family is like a little close by, but like not living at home with her yet. And then she has in-laws who also require care who are a little bit further away. So like the travel presents a different layer of challenge too. Whereas I think there's also different challenges to having your parents live with you.
Totally.
We could turn every How We Feed episode into a How We Feed sandwiches.
Yeah. Yes. Sandwich generation.
Yes. I was trying to make a joke. Like, we have a whole episode on sandwiches. Sandwich generation. We're a sandwich podcast. I think there is a sandwich podcast. Okay. But before we chat with Laura, I just have to, you know, invite you to join our Didn't I Just Feed You listeners community. Our free community is where listeners from all over the world come together to ask questions, offer advice, and share favorite tips and recipes with direct access to both of us. We'd love to have you as a supporting member of our community too. Recipe subscribers are about to get a whole new batch of holiday recipes in the coming weeks. Visit Didn't I Just Feed You /community to get all the details on how you can access those, as well as our Didn't I Just Feed You bonus episodes.
Okay, so I have a proposal, Megan. I think that we should introduce Laura and jump right in with her. And then I have a whole bunch of questions for you.
Okay, I love it so much.
Laura Mountain lives in Illinois with her husband, two stepdaughters, ages 19 and 13, and her youngest daughter, who's only 3. Laura and her husband are living the sandwich generation life, caring not only for their kids, but also for her dad, who's permanently disabled, her mom, who has recently battled 3 different kinds of cancer, and her father-in-law, who's battling ALS and is mostly confined to a wheelchair. Laura is a lawyer who works full-time training public defenders throughout Illinois. Seeing an unmet need, she has recently started offering training programs on how to make the most of life in the sandwich generation, in hopes that at least some of the millions of parents who make up this group can feel seen and find helpful tips and advice. Welcome, Laura. Thank you so much for being with us. I want to start by just hearing more about your story. Like, tell us who lives with you, who you feed, and how this all came to be.
Sure. So I live with my husband and my two stepdaughters. They're age 19 and 13. And our toddler, who's 3. Our oldest, 19, actually just moved into college into a dorm, but she lives like 5 minutes away, so we see her still quite frequently.
I bet you still feed her.
Yes.
We do, actually. We do a decent amount of feeding her still. Yeah, and then I live in the same city as my parents. I live in the city that I grew up. And my dad, about 9 years ago, had a stroke, and that left him permanently disabled. So he requires caretaking. And so he lives with my mom, who's the primary caretaker. We have some help that comes in during the day, but then we take turns kind of, I'm one of a large family of 7 brothers and sisters. So on Saturdays, we take turns kind of getting him out of bed, feeding him throughout the day, getting him into bed. My mom has recently had colon cancer. She had to have surgery for colon cancer. And then the next year, she had stage 2 breast cancer, so required treatment for that, and then had another kind of cancer the year after that. So she is doing well, but I'm sure anyone who has dealt with breast cancer or any other kind of cancer knows there's a lot of medication that goes on after treatment to make sure that the cancer doesn't come back. And sometimes it's just trying to find the best of the worst side effects. So for her, the side effect that she's really dealing with is real pain in her joints, especially in her hands. So for a while, she wasn't able to like turn a doorknob, much less like turn on a stove burner or open a can or anything like that. It's still kind of there. So we kind of try to help out as much as possible when it comes to, you know, cooking and feeding. I go over twice a week with dinner. Partly, I know my mom was like, I can do it. And that's probably true, but it's also nice to do. And it's a nice opportunity to see them and check on them. And then my father-in-law has ALS, and he's 6 years into his diagnosis. So he is pretty much permanently in a wheelchair. They live 90 miles from us. So we go up there, you know, quite often, or, you know, a lot of times we'll get, you know, a phone call. Hey, your dad fell. So we zip up there to help out in any way we can.
My father passed away about 5 years ago, and living far from him was really, really difficult at the end of his life, but also a relief, if I'm going to just be completely honest and transparent, because that like constant need, and at the time, my kids were much younger, so I felt very overwhelmed by just trying to manage work and my own like little nuclear family. the thought of having to like run to help my stepmother and deal with my dad was overwhelming. But then at the same time, being far was really difficult. I don't know if you want to share this, but you must go back and forth between feeling really grateful that you're able to pitch in this way, but then also being like, oh, this is so hard. If I just lived far away, I wouldn't have to deal with all this. It's a lot. Yeah,
100%. Exactly. There is a huge part of me that is so grateful. I chose to move. I've been living in the city. I chose to move back to my hometown, mm-hmm. knowing that I would be close by. I have a brother that also lives in the same hometown as me. So we share responsibilities. But I know that my time with my dad is not forever, nor with my mom. And there was a time, actually, on his birthday this year, he had been in a rehab center after a recent hospitalization, and we got a phone call saying he's going back to the hospital. It's not looking good. And my thought was, I'm at peace with whatever happens, because I saw him this morning. I took him, you know, but it happened to be Easter Day. So, like, I had, you know, taken him an Easter basket. Yeah. I was actually making him cupcakes at the time that I got the phone call. And I thought, I've done everything that I could to help my dad and take care of him. And I've had so many opportunities to have so many conversations with him. He was an attorney just like me, and his stroke did not affect his memory or his comprehension. So we're still able to have that bond. And, you know, I got married later in life. So my dad had already had the stroke, and he wasn't able to walk me down the aisle, and he wasn't able to, you know, have a first dance with me. But he has such an amazing relationship with my youngest daughter. You know, he calls her my ponytail girl. And so I'm so grateful for that relationship that we have.
Yeah.
But then there are times where I sit in my car and just scream, because it is really hard taking care of your own kids and other, you know, and your parents, and working a full-time job and feeling like you're not doing a good job at any of them. You know, there are just times you feel like I'm just failing at everything, and there's just not enough time in the day. So it's definitely a conflicting feeling. I'm super happy and grateful to have the experience that I'm living right now, but in the day-to-day moments, it can be really hard, for sure.
I appreciate your candor, because I just think for other people in the same position, hearing that is validating, because I just don't think that there's any right one way to feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have learned that you can hold two conflicting feelings at the same time. And I frequently do.
Laura, I think it's kind of interesting, when we asked you to tell us your story, you told us a lot about your family, but you kind of left out the part where, in addition to all of that, all you're dealing with, you work full time. Your husband works full time. And I'm assuming also your brother, who helps with your parents, also works full time. So how are you all dealing with the logistics of feeding your parents and also taking care of your own families and all the other obligations that come along with those?
We have a group chat of my brothers and sisters and I. So we kind of let each other know, like, hey, I have Thursdays and Sundays is usually when I go over, but sometimes things come up. So I'll post something like, hey, can anyone go over on Sunday instead? We also have like a NFL style draft every quarter to pick our Saturdays that we're going to take care of. You know, everybody takes a turn. And most of my siblings live, you know, within 90 miles. So it's okay. But it definitely is a challenge. I will say planning helps a lot in logistics. So for my family, we do meal planning 2 weeks at a time, mostly because I hate it. I'm not good at, like, whenever it's time for me to think of dinner, I'm like, God, I can't even think of a meal, you know. But our kids really like to be a part of that process. I don't know if this is like normal for kids. I think it probably is. But they like to know what's for dinner every night. We kind of stick to it.
Yeah.
And so they kind of like to volunteer. Oh, how about this? How about that? And when we do the 2 week planning, our calendar is right next to like where we do the meal planning. So we kind of know, like, okay, this is a night at my parents' house. So we need to do something that is easy to transport. My mom does not really love it when people cook in her own kitchen. So we have to think like, okay, what can we cook here and easily transport there? And we have some like every, you know, our daughters really love breakfast for dinner, so we have it once a week every time. That's when my stepdaughter from college, she comes home every week for that, because she doesn't want to miss breakfast for dinner. And so we kind of have some of those rituals that we were able to, you know, to have every week to week. And that really helps for us. The planning helps a lot, just logistically, kind of knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
Do you have any special tools that you use, like a meal planning app? Or the, like you talked about, an NFL style draft, which is like such a great description of it. Or is it literally just like old school, like a whiteboard and a text thread? And that's that.
Yeah, it's like a whiteboard and a text thread. Although there are two things that I have done is there's been a couple of weeks where, or 2 week periods where I was like, this is a really good 2 week slot. Like, well, like everything is really busy, everything is chaotic, but we found foods that are easy to make that don't take a ton of time that everybody generally likes. So I like quick snap a picture of that and like save it in my favorites. And every now and then I'll go back. And then I will say, especially around the holidays, it gets very chaotic because there's school concerts and then there's all the extra, you know, going to see the lights and all these visiting Santa. So totally. Last year, I meal planned from November 15th through the end of the year. I just took one day where I did all of it.
Whoa!
I know. It took a long time, but it was amazing because we just didn't have to put that thought into it. You know, I ran it by my husband, obviously. And then I saved it. So I just pulled it out for this year. And I'm like, oh, this is lovely. I'm like, thank you, Past Laura. So I kind of have that done, which is, I'm super happy that I did that. So not high tech, but just kind of setting myself up in the future to make life a little easier.
Yeah. And then knowing, like doing what you've already done and you know what works, which I think a lot of people feel, especially people who identify as meal planners, aka me, like, oh, I have to do something new and exciting every once in a while. But like for some seasons, just plug and play is so, so helpful. Okay. I want to talk about your mom a little bit because I find this, like the fact that she doesn't want, I appreciates being fed. She doesn't want you to cook in her kitchen. Was she like the primary cook for your family growing up and even before her cancer diagnosis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so she raised 8 kids and is kind of done cooking, you know, like she did it. She never really loved doing it. We ate a lot of the same, you know, spaghetti and tacos and, you know, sandwiches. And I kind of respect it. Right. And, but also like there's this tension, not really tension, but it's just, it's her home and it's her space. You know, it's, I grew up in that house, but I also want to respect, it's not, those aren't my dishes. Those aren't, you know, I think that's a little bit of just making sure that we know that she still had a household. And I think that's fair. And I completely respect it. And also like, it's the worst when somebody comes over, you know, makes a big meal and then it's like, oh, that was so great. And then there's like everything to clean up. And that's not helpful either, because especially with her hands, doing the dishes, taking out the garbage, all of that stuff is actually, it's really hard on her. And so we just try to be as unintrusive as possible while helping.
I do love this idea of respecting her space. I feel like as you get older, researchers looked at places where older people, elders in the community really thrived. And I think they were originally looking at diet. It's like Mediterranean diet, like Icarus in Greece is a place I remember, of course, because I'm Greek. My mother was like, look, Icarus. I was like, I know. But actually, the thing that they felt, the researchers felt, was most powerful was that the elders in the community still had a role and still had this important autonomy. They were still very much integrated into the community the way that they always had been. And that gives a very important sense of self that is critical to your health, even though it's emotional and psychological, it's critical to your physical health. So for your mom, this idea that like, I was head of household. This is my home. This is my space. This is how I've always operated in our family. To be able to maintain some semblance of that as all these other factors change, I bet is not just powerful for her psychologically, but really like great for her physically too, you know, to be able to put all of her energy into being as healthy as possible as she faces these different medical challenges.
I definitely think that's true. And I experienced that with my in-laws too. I mean, the day before Thanksgiving last year, we got a text from my father-in-law saying, your mom just broke her foot, you know, and they were like having all their family over for Thanksgiving. So obviously awesome I was timing. Like telling my husband, like, okay, well, you just, you know, he was at work. I was like, just leave early, go up to see them. And her first response was, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. Because yeah. of course you want that autonomy and you want to know, make sure everything's okay. And so that is, it's when it comes to caring and feeding our parents, learning that line of how to be helpful, because we're not going to let, you know, my father-in-law in a wheelchair, my mother-in-law with a broken foot, and 20 family members coming over for Thanksgiving the next day. It's just not, we just don't feel comfortable being like, okay, well, let us know how that goes. So we want to be helpful, but we also want to respect when they say, you know, we have it. Finding that is constantly a learning. I don't think there's a way to really have it down pat all the time.
I will say,
my mom actually pointed me to a USA article a few years ago. and I was like, this article talked to seniors about what annoys them about their adult children. And a common thing had to do with food. And I don't like it when my kids come over and throw out all my expired foods or criticize the foods that I'm eating. And so I was like, okay, well, I will no longer do that. And just kind of learning that, because again, it's like their autonomy. They're like, if I want to have food that was expired, I guess that's fine. I'm not going to feed that to my kids because I just don't feel comfortable with it. So again, it's like, do we eat the food that's in the house, which is usually all pretty good? I'm not saying like there's expired food, but or do we bring the food in? And it's kind of like a bit of both, I think.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting to think about the balancing of those two things. As we move into fall and winter cooking, we're stocking up in broth, the building block of our favorite soups, stews, and holiday dishes. While we love making homemade stock, that just isn't always possible.
Which is why we asked Zoop to return as a sponsor. And y'all, they said yes. We couldn't be more excited to welcome them back. And the timing couldn't be more perfect for their super premium broths.
Zoop makes it easy to add rich, homemade taste to all your cooking. Their flavor-forward broths include chicken, beef, veggie, and seafood, plus bone broths that you can sip. And now Zoop also offers culinary concentrates, small batch broth concentrates, and heat and eat soups.
I'm obsessed with the culinary concentrates. They have unbeatable flavor, great for making sauces and boosting casseroles, pasta, and rice dishes. 1 8-ounce jar makes up to 10 quarts of restaurant quality broth.
I also love Zoop soups. Each small batch made soup starts with one of Zoop's homestyle broths, giving it a simmered all day flavor. It's a perfect quick meal, whether for dinner or a work from home lunch.
Just like their broths, Zoop culinary concentrates and heat and eat soups are free of preservatives, artificial ingredients, and gluten. And everything comes packaged in recyclable glass containers.
To learn more about why we love Zoop so much and to browse recipes too, visit zoopbroth.com or go to @ZoopGoodReallyGood on Facebook and Instagram.
Zoop Good Really Good Broth, culinary concentrates, and soups can be found at retailers nationwide, including Walmart, Sprouts, and Kroger, plus online at zoopbroth.com.
Or order from Amazon and be sure to use 20FEEDNOV, short for November, to get 20% off your order through November 30th of this year. That's 20FEEDNOV, short for November.
Stacey, I don't know about you, but I've been in a major spring cleaning mode, including purging and organizing my closet. I'm putting away winter sweaters and donating things that don't work for me anymore. But I'm so excited to be pulling out some of my favorite items from Quince to put back into rotation.
Totally. I love the pieces that I bought from Quince last year, too. And neither of us should really be surprised. We love Quince for their quality. And by partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
Which means I can actually add some pieces back to my closet after my spring clear out. I love the linen pants and top I got last season so much, but my next purchase is one of Quince's gorgeous 100% washable silk skirts.
Oh, that's so pretty. And the best part? all Quince items from silk to 14 karat gold are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's why I snagged my favorite oversized cashmere boyfriend cardigan from Quince instead of any other brand.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/DIJFY for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/DIJFY, short for Didn't I Just Feed You, to get free shipping and 365-day returns. ButcherBox is our secret to better back pocket meals on the fly during busy seasons like spring. They make it easy to choose a box of our family's favorite proteins that get delivered straight to our door. With the freezer stocked with 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood, there's no running to the store for last-minute dinner ingredients. Plus, with free ground beef for life, we know that when meetings or soccer practice run late, we always have a reliable family favorite on hand for a quick dinner with ButcherBox's high-quality meats and a few pantry staples. That's right. ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for the life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Visit ButcherBox.com/DIJFY and use code DIJFY to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box. That's ButcherBox.com/DIJFY and code DIJFY, short for Didn't I Just Feed You? Y'all, I have to tell you about how much fun I've been having with clothing rentals from Armoire. You know that I've been using Armoire for a while now to help navigate everything from my changing body to personal style roots. But recently, Armoire came in clutch with personalized style suggestions for a spring break trip. I tried a beautiful dress from Farm Rio and a pair of white wide leg jeans from Paige Denim. Plus, sending my items back after vacation was so easy, and now I get to select a new case full of fresh items for spring and summer. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for a more new-to-you style. Right now, Didn't I Just Feed You listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/DIJFY. That's Armoire Style, armoire.style/DIJFY to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. We know you're seeing all the Mother's Day gift guides everywhere. And while we usually do some Didn't I Just Feed You version, this year we have the one perfect Mother's Day gift that works for everyone, even our last minute shoppers, MyLifeInABook.com.
MyLifeInABook.com is a unique service that turns the life stories of people you love into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your gift recipient a question via email. These can be pre-written questions that they provide, or you can customize the questions the way that I did for my mom. Your recipient can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book.
I'm really excited to be creating a book with my own mom this year, and I can't wait to hear some of her childhood memories, what it was really like raising 3 kids as a single mother, and how she's enjoyed becoming a grandmother, too.
And when the book is done, you'll have a beautiful keepsake for her and for you, too. You can even choose to have an audiobook created from the recordings. It's easy to sign up, and the process is automated, so you don't have to worry about missing a week.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code DIJFY at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code DIJFY for 10% off today. This episode of Didn't I Just Feed You is sponsored by By Heart. Longtime listeners know that Stacy and I both struggled with infant feeding stages with all our kids. Breastfeeding was hard, and choosing a formula was, well, also hard. We're thrilled to be working with By Heart, an infant nutrition company on a mission to make the best formula in the world. Not only is By Heart an easy-to-digest formula, their formula is also clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit-up, and softer poops versus leading infant formula. By Heart has their own patented protein blend that includes prebiotics and an 80-20 whey to casein ratio, just like in early breast milk, which is tailor-made for a newborn's digestive system. Curious about By Heart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code DIJFY for a limited time. That's byheart.com/podcast and code DIJFY, short for Didn't I Just Feed You? Additional terms and conditions apply. Both Stacey and I have shared our own candid experiences with mental health and helping our families deal with their own. We both know firsthand that if you have ADHD, it can be overwhelming to find the right treatment. That's why we're glad to partner with Done. In just 1 minute, Done's online assessment can help kickstart your ADHD treatment journey. With experienced clinicians, worry-free refills, and online visits, you can start getting personalized care as soon as tomorrow. Take a free 1 minute assessment and book an appointment with a licensed ADHD clinician as soon as the next day. Get continuous care, one-click refills, insurance coverage, and 24/7 care team support with Done for just $79 a month and pharmacy copays as low as $0. Unlock your path to better focus now at get.donefirst.com/podcast. Done. Turn ADHD into your strength.
So then, I'm sorry, we're not trying to make this whole episode about your mom, although I think that that we both have unique relationships with our mom. I know, that would be so good. We both have unique relationships with our mom and with food, and so I think there's something interesting there. But because she's had several cancers and she's on medications, are there certain, and this may also probably applies to both your dad and your in-laws as well. Like, what are the food considerations for them? Like, are there things that your mom doesn't like to eat anymore because her palate has changed because of the cancer treatments? And like, same thing, you know, your father-in-law with his ALS, like, is it there, are there certain considerations and like what's easy for him to eat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think it's actually kind of different amongst all three of them, right? Because it just depends on what their circumstances are. So for my father-in-law, it's, you know, foods that are going to be easily eaten because his muscles are not quite where they've been. And I think eventually, I think he will have to have a feeding tube. Thank goodness he's not there yet. Also silverware, like, that's not heavy to pick up, or a cup that's not heavy. So we make sure that we have silverware and plates and cups that are like very light, but are not toddler cups, you know, because we don't want to be insulting to them.
Again, so, it's that dignity and that autonomy. Yes,
exactly. And they actually travel with their own set of silverware and dinnerware whenever they go. With my dad, there's definitely like, there are some medications where you can't eat after taking it for a little while. So we have to time our meals a little bit. And my dad is paralyzed on his whole left side and he is left-handed. So there's not a ton that he can do on his own. If you cut his food up for him, he'll be able to eat it. But then you have to think again with the dignity, what kind of foods are you going to serve him that he can eat and not just make a complete mess out of. So we have, it's like a bib, but we call it a shirt saver, right? Because he's not a child. So we always have a shirt saver on him and there's always sweeping or vacuuming to be done. But we try to set him up for success, again, as much as possible. And he's blind in his left side. So that somebody always has to sit next to him to like turn the plate so he can actually see the food that's there. And then just like, because he doesn't have really a lot of control over his own body, we have to make sure that the foods that he eat aren't going to cause digestive problems for whoever's taking care of him later. And that part is really hard for me because my dad was an attorney. He had cases in the Illinois Supreme Court. He's a very brilliant man, but he can't decide if he's going to have a drink of water or a cup of coffee, or, you know, there's no like, I'm hungry or I'm bored, I'm just going to go see, you know, what's in the kitchen. Yeah. Literally, he can only have something if somebody brings it to him. And so that independence is already gone. And so sometimes he wants food that is really challenging because it's going to cause problems later. And I'm like, what do I do here? Because I don't want to deny his independence. He's already lost so much of it. But at the same time, I don't want to cause problems for my mom later on as well. So I do my best just not to bring those foods into the house is my workaround for that.
Yeah. So you have a lot of parameters when you're meal planning. I would think that meal planning is actually the hardest piece of the puzzle, because once you have those meals down, mm-hmm. it's about just executing, which can be chaotic and you need a system and a schedule and all that. But when you're meal planning, are mm-hmm. you making one meal for your parents and another meal for you and your kids? Or are you trying to come up with one meal that checks all the boxes on days when you're responsible for feeding other people?
We come up with, as much as possible, one meal that will check all the boxes. But our two older kids are a little bit older. So like the oldest kid, she doesn't have to come over if she doesn't want to. She has her own car. She's 19. You know, she can do what she wants. The 13-year-old is perfectly, you know, she's happy to make herself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich if she's not up for it. And fortunately, my toddler is not a picky eater. So she actually is up for pretty much whatever we have. But usually, like, Thursday nights, we have dinner as a family over at my parents' house. And the same thing on Sunday nights as well. So we do our best to find a meal that everybody would like. And we probably honestly like have five in rotation that we just kind of go over and over and over again. And then of course, there's some times where my mom's like, you know what? I think I want to cook for the family tonight. And then we're like, okay, yeah. We'll be over.
Can you give us an example of some of the five meals that are in rotation?
Yeah. So chicken shawarma is really popular in my family, and it's very easy for me because I work from home on Thursday, so I can like get that marinating in the morning and then just, you know, cook it in the oven while I'm, you know, working, and then quickly, right before I leave, take it out of the oven and move it over. Frozen meatballs is hugely popular. So that's actually what we're doing tonight. And it's really easy because you can, if I have time, I'll make some pasta with it. Otherwise, sometimes we just have it on its own or in a sandwich. But everybody likes the meatballs. It's a universal winner. Tacos work well. That's hard for my dad. I have learned the taco folding technique that won't have everything fall out as much as possible. Yeah, those are kind of common.
I need you to go on social media and show us the taco folding technique.
Yeah,
I feel like I need to see that.
Yeah, not just for your dad, but like for toddlers. Like, I think that's there's that really interesting sort of like crossover there. We talked a lot about your parents and your in-laws, but like, what are the implications for being in this sort of like sandwich generation for your kids, both your teens and your youngest?
Well, I mean, it's definitely taught all of us flexibility and not to hold things too closely. I mean, like the Thanksgiving example is, you know, perfect. Like we were having Thanksgiving here and then suddenly my husband was, you know, up, you know, taking care of his in-laws. So everybody kind of had to pitch in to, you know, help with our Thanksgiving. And I think that's fairly important we do a lot of planning, but maybe somewhat paradoxically, we also don't hold those plans too tight.
Yes.
That's, you know, kind of important. I will say like our kids are pretty good at expressing when they're bummed because they thought they were going to have one meal and then we have to switch it up and do something else. There are times when I like get home and I'm just like, I know we have this plan for dinner, but I just need to order a pizza so bad right now. And I, for some reason, I always think, oh, the kids are going to love that, right? Like, who doesn't, you know? And they're kind of like, well, I was really looking forward to, you know, what we had. Aww. And that's kind of an adjustment because you don't ever want to disappoint your kids. And, you know, it's hard as a mom to think like, I don't have the energy to feed you in the way that you are used to being fed and want to be fed. And that's like, it's a real, you know, it's a blow. And that's hard because when that happens, I'm already at an energy and emotional level that's like already bad, right? That's why I need to order the pizza. So just trying to understand where we're all at. And then, you know, where my kids are at too. 19, 13, those are hard ages. So having some respect for, you know, what's going on in their lives is something that you just have to take a deep breath and like, okay, we'll get through this.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, especially I can imagine being 19 and going home and expecting a home-cooked meal. I mean, that first year or two out of the house, you just feel like you're floating. It goes from being so exciting to being so scary and overwhelming. you know, and there's nothing like going home and having a home-cooked meal that you were looking forward to.
Right. And it's hard post-pandemic, yeah. You know, all of that transitions, they're just bumpier than I think they were in the past. So, you know, I always really appreciate that. I will say when my youngest was a baby, there were a lot of considerations that we had. Like, we always had a go bag in the car because we never knew if we were going to like be up in Milwaukee or had to go something else. And when she was little, we had to supplement her. So we always had formula. And then, you know, when she started to eat some baby food, because it was just easier and more peace of mind for me to know that I had that food right there. And for instance, I will tell you that I had my daughter and I had a cesarean, and then 5 days later, we got a phone call saying, your father-in-law, like, come, this is the end, you need to come. And I'm like, okay. So I like had been home from the hospital for 2 days. I'm breastfeeding for the first time. I'm in a lot of pain from like the surgery and for breastfeeding. I still don't know quite how to feed my kid, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. And they're saying, you know, she's losing weight, you need to supplement. Yeah. And like, yeah, we're driving, but we have to like pull over so that I can feed her. And everybody's upset because of what's going on. And I don't want to delay getting there, but then I need to figure out how to feed my kid. So there's just a lot of like managing those emotions and remembering, like, you know, I was just like silently crying the entire time we were going up because, yeah, I was in so much pain. Totally. And my kid's crying in the back and I'm like, we have to feed her. I don't know. You know, like, I'm like, yes, 5 days into this, I don't know what I'm doing. That was hard, but it also kind of set me up to like give myself a little bit of grace. You know, like, there was, yeah, no question. And fortunately, my father-in-law recovered. Yeah. He was great, but there's like no question we're going, right? And so we just have to learn how to figure out how to do it.
And I feel like clear communication must, mm-hmm, be key in all of this. I mean, mm-hmm, I'm saying that as someone who's a hyper communicator, so that's obviously, yeah, my natural bias. But when there's so many people and so many emotions, and really big emotions, I mean, this is like a lot of real stuff going on. Mm-hmm. You know, even dealing, I think there's a lot of grief involved in just watching your parents grow old and watching their health fail, even before you're starting to think about, you know, their death. Mm-hmm. It's hard. There's a lot of grieving that goes into that. And those are big feelings to have to navigate. So I imagine that talking is key in your family.
It is. We try to do it as much as possible. You know, it's not always quite as easy as it's, you, yeah, know, not everybody wants to talk about it at the same, yes, time, right?
Yes.
But we, ever easy? We do try to as much as possible. I will say my husband, like, he's really great at it. And he's, you know, so generous and patient and can kind of tease it out of all of us when we need to. And he sees things coming from a distance in a way that I don't. And it's nice to have somebody like that. Like, okay, here's probably the things that we're going to be navigating. And that is really wonderful. We also do like try to model for our kids apologizing when we're not 100% in control, yes, of the emotions. Like, I'm really sorry. I was under stress. I, you know, shouldn't have yelled. And we kind of talk about it as much as we can, but it's not perfect. I have probably, if I'm being honest, more moments I'm not proud of than I am when it comes to that sort of, yeah, thing.
I don't know. It sounds like you're really doing a really good job. And I'm struck like hearing all of the struggles and all the tension that like you still have these wonderful family traditions of like doing breakfast for dinner once a week and like your college, mm-hmm, daughter coming home to enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But also, I feel like we have to talk about money. Like, you had a baby in the last 3 years. That's a huge expense. And now you, mm-hmm, have a kid in college. That is a huge expense. And you mentioned like daytime care for your dad. Like, that's like not even, we're not even getting to the grocery implications of feeding multiple people or multiple generations. So like, can you talk about that? And like, how are you sharing that burden with your extended family who's maybe not able to be as present for taking care of your parents and your in-laws?
Yeah. I mean, so when I do some talking about this on the regular with, you know, different groups of people. So I know that the average amount of money spent on taking care of parents is like $1,200 a month in extra expenses, which is a ton. And that's not anywhere, wow, we come in to play. But when you think about that, that's like,
that's a mortgage.
That's a lot of money.
That's a mortgage for it some
is.
People.
It really
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. I will say, like, I have 8 brothers and sisters. And when you divide that amount up, that's not the amount that we, you know, have, but that's just like the overall, it helps to divide that up. But there's definitely, like, we have to figure out what our priorities are. So we try to have, you know, a meatball dinner is like, you know, a frozen bag of meatballs is $6.99. And my mom usually has a can of green beans that we have on the side. Baked potatoes, like, it actually, those lesser expensive meals tend to coincide with also like fast, right?
Yeah.
Like, or easy. I can, while I'm working from home, toss the baked potatoes in the oven, and that's a nice meal. But we don't really do a lot of, like, a lot of extravagance. Mostly because, like, our kids just, they're not into it. So, like, well, why spend a lot of money on a nice steak when my daughter's, like, not going to eat it at all?
Totally.
So where we really kind of, like, lose control is, like, I just emotionally don't want to cook. And so we're going to order a pizza or something, you know, or I'm just, like, completely exhausted. Or we forgot to thaw whatever we needed to do.
Yes.
You know, you got to pivot. That's where, like, food expenses can kind of come into play. But, yeah, I mean, we just, when we meal plan, we kind of keep that, like, breakfast for dinner, you know, eggs and bread, or, you know, making a pancake is something that we can do that's not going to be super expensive, that all the kids will like, that, you know, we can budget adequately for. It's definitely a consideration.
Yeah. I feel like feeding that number of people under any circumstance, it's hard to get extravagant
yeah.
because there are just so many tastes, especially when you throw teenagers and kids into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really good reminder for people that this makes sense to keep it simple. Like, this mm-hmm. isn't pandering. It's
yeah.
actually good for your budget. It makes it easy to meal plan. It helps you, you know, be efficient with your time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, simple meals also tend to satisfy.
That's been our experience. And we had, our middle daughter is great now, but she really struggled with picky eating when she was younger and, you know, had like 5 foods that she would eat, you know, and now she's great, but it just kind of naturally led into kind of a little more simplification. And we have regulars that we, you know, we kind of have in the routine, and we've switched grocery stores so that, you know, we go to a different grocery store that's a little less expensive, but we kind of hit the same number every week. Like, we kind of have that down where it's like maybe within a $10 or $20 variation, but like we kind of are able to stick with that.
Okay. So 2 questions. The first one is, how do you, in those times when you're like stressed, when you want to order mm-hmm. pizza, when there's just like things are not going to plan, how do you ask for help? And like, what are the things that are essential to you taking care of yourself so that you have the energy to do mm-hmm. all the care that you do for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Not that great at asking for help.
Me either. Full transparency. I hate it. I don't know why. I like tell people all the time, I'm like, just reach out. If you need help. And I would jump. I would drop anything. But like, I'm not yes. asking for it. No. Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
we're
also
asking you because we want ideas. Come on, Laura.
Well, I will tell you. So therapy is really good.
Yes.
And one suggestion, what I really struggle with is people can see that we're in need. And a common question is, what can I do to help? And sometimes I'm like, look around. Everything's on fire. Just pick one fire and put it out for me. Just pick it. But they don't know. And they don't, you know, necessarily know, is it going to be too intrusive if I come do your laundry or whatever? So my therapist, and in the moment, I never know. I just never know. She was like, make a list in a moment of calm of things that you would like, you would feel comfortable having somebody help out with that you can do. So that has helped. My husband, I've also recently gone back to work in the office. So we try to food prep the night before, like, okay, we're going to have this, you know, the next day, what needs to be chopped? What can we do ahead of time as much as possible? So we're pretty good as a team with that. And then just like, I will say, like, my mom is really great. I had, you know, if I have 3 or 4 days in a row that I'm over there for whatever reason, like I will say to my mom, I know it's Sunday night, but I just don't think we're going to come over. And she's completely understanding. You know, it's not an obligation. You know, she can be flexible it helps that I have so many siblings to be like, I just am overwhelmed. I'm underwater. It's really great to call a sister and just cry. I mean, I do a lot of crying just because that's my nature. I express every emotion through tears, but just talking about it helps. Honestly, for me, like starting to talk to other people and kind of a lot of people just like having them feel seen and other, when people tell me, you know, like, thank you for talking about this because it's like, I'm hearing my own story. It does. It makes me feel better. So just even like, even you inviting me to come and talk about it helps me because it's kind of shines a light on an area that is hard for a lot of people.
Yeah. You mentioned to us and you're like, when you first reached out that you're starting to sort of like share your experience and your learnings over the last, you said 8 years of like doing this. What is the like best advice or like what's some top line advice you give someone who like they're just thrown into it? Maybe they have a parent have to like come and live with them and they have young kids and they're like, your whole life kind of just exploded and is so different. What advice do you give them?
I think being generous with yourself is the most important thing. I like to fix everything and it's just not possible. So I think, you know, it really, as much as you can bring other people in and share the responsibility is helpful. But also I kind of go back to like just planning as much as possible, even though I hate it. I hate meal planning. Like it takes us a long time and the reason we do it every 2 weeks is because I don't want to do it every week. It's terrible, but it pays off. It does pay off, I begrudgingly say. And then just really finding those things that are like for my own personal family, my husband and my kids, what is important to us that we're going to say, we're doing this. I'm going to the concert. We're having breakfast for dinner. Somebody else has got to take it, whatever, because it's hard for me to admit, but like life will go on. If I'm not over there, somebody will help. They'll make it through the night. I'm not like the linchpin of everybody making it through. And that has helped me, you know, immensely. And I would encourage people to prioritize their own immediate family as much as it may be difficult to do because you want to help others.
Totally. Before we sign off, we've talked a lot about the challenges and tips and techniques. Are there any unexpected joys and benefits that have come out of this experience of, you know, finding yourself taking care of your parents maybe more than you expected?
Well, you know, I mean, I love my parents so much. They did so many amazing things for me, giving me 7 brothers and sisters. And so I don't know, we probably all would still be really close, even if we weren't under these circumstances. But I get to see my brothers and sisters a lot, because if one of them are here in town to take care of their dad, it's their Saturday. Then my kids get to see their cousins. You know, there's a lot of built-in family things that we do that are just a ton of fun. And that's been great to see those moments. And then you just have these moments of ordinary life, like seeing my father-in-law used to play the piano. We have a piano in the house, and you know, him putting my daughter on his lap at the wheelchair, and they're like both playing the piano. Like, come on, it's wonderful. You know, it's just those times are really great. And then I will say, like, after a particularly hard time and I've gotten through it and I look back and I think, okay, I did that. Maybe I didn't do it perfectly. Maybe I've learned some lessons as how I would do it, you know, going forward, but it's given me a lot more confidence in honestly, the way that I parent going forward, the way that I do my full-time job going forward. That has been a pleasant bonus, I guess.
I mean, that's it. That's Laura, it right
I'm in
there.
Complete awe. Yeah. complete awe. I am. I mean, I really appreciate you sharing your story with us today and taking the time. I know. Like, how's Laura have time to be talking to us right now? I don't know. Let's keep it moving.
Well, I really appreciate
it. She's got so much to do.
There are a lot of people like me. I think you will probably find that I'm not unique. And a lot of people are in this situation, but a lot of times it's just assumed like that's just what you do, right? Like I grew up watching my parents take care of their parents, and
yes,
and that's just what you do, and that's how life is. But it's been really helpful to pause and be like, yeah, but that's hard sometimes. And sometimes it's really great, but sometimes it helps to just acknowledge the difficulties along the way.
Well, we really appreciate you being here. Are you up for sharing if people can, they need some support and they can reach out to you?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you're more than welcome to share my email. I'm on Instagram, but I'm like a lurker on Instagram. So if somebody wants to DM me, like they can. Yeah. They're just not going to see much on my page. If they
we will like have you share your email right here. But if someone needs support, we hope that they'll reach out to us at hello@didn'tijustfeedyou.com and we'll connect you to Laura and some of her resources. Thank you again for joining us today.
Okay, Megan, I'm really struck by how it seems like fuel for powering through what seems to be a very challenging situation for Laura seems to be having this close, large family. She speaks with her mom and dad with such admiration. It's really beautiful. She mentioned offhandedly that she watched her parents take care of her grandparents. So this has been modeled generationally. She has a bunch of siblings to rely on. But I don't know that that's the case forever. I still think that the lessons that she has to teach are applicable for everybody. But I do feel like as someone who has a really different kind of family, it's important to acknowledge that that isn't the case for a lot of people, and that can make the emotional burden feel even heavier. Mm-hmm. So both you and I are in a position where I think it'd be really hard to have to care for certain parents, right?
Yes. Yeah. One, it's like really interesting to hear Laura's perspective as the child of a social worker. So my mom I grew up with my mom working in elderly care in like hospice for people who were dying. She actually went on to get her PhD in social work and made part of her thesis about bereavement and public education around grief. So this aging transition is something that we have talked about a lot. Like my mom is very clear about what she wants her later in life care to look like, presuming that she just like doesn't have a huge diagnosis or a huge change, like having a stroke and requiring much more care, but assuming she just like ages, what she wants her aging to look like.
That is so key. That again, I know I mentioned it. I was sort of stumbling through talking about communication. But, you know, communication doesn't always have to be like, let's have a talk about our feelings right now. But the fact that your mom has a sense of what she wants and is clear about that, I don't know, from where I sit, that seems really helpful.
It's really helpful, but I do know that it comes from a place of like her lived experience of like she watched dementia patients. She watched people who were aging have a sort of end of life care that wasn't what they wanted. And like, just to add some humor, because this is like a very heavy conversation. My mom has always, one of the things that she's been explicit about, she's like, I don't care if you have to hire someone or if you come in and do it. She's like, but do not let me be one of those old ladies with whiskers. The nurses will, if you ask them to deal with your mustache, they will shave it. She's like, don't do me dirty like that. You come in, you wax it, or you bleach it for me. That's my one ask.
I'm literally right now adding that to my running list.
Yes.
For when I get older.
Yes. And like, she's like, that's, I think as she's aged, she's like, okay, maybe that's the, like a lower priority, or she hits on it less. And maybe that was like her humor in dealing with a lot of the loss that she experienced. And then the flip side of this, so like two things. I don't have a super close relationship with my dad. The last time he came to visit and the only time he's met my kids was when we lived in Boise. It's like almost 5 years ago now. And I tried to have a conversation with him about, I was like, you know, mom's really clear about like what she wants her end of life to look like. There's a will. We're all very clear on what our roles are as she ages, as the end of her life. And he was like, I don't see why we need to talk about that.
Okay.
Like, just no, no acknowledgement of that. And to share, my half-brother, Jordan, who lived with us during the pandemic, his dad also came to live with us when he was living with us in Boise. And we had a conversation with him about his end of life and what he would like. Because we just, it was like the kind of thing where it was like, I asked my dad when he was here, have you guys had a conversation? Jordan didn't want to bring it up, but I was like, I will. I'll be the weird older sister. And so they were able to have a conversation. And 6 months later, he died unexpectedly.
Oh, man.
And so they had been able to have that conversation. Yeah. And Jordan was able to navigate with his brother, like, how they were going to, like, he was going to be cremated and how he would like to be memorialized and all of those things that you don't want to talk about. Like, it sucks to talk about them, but, like, you just don't know. So having the conversations well in advance of, like, having a cancer diagnosis, having a stroke is really important. But what about you? Because you've, like, you've lost your father already. You are the only living sibling. Sibling's
child,
not the right word.
My mother's child, only living child
of your mother.
Yeah. You know, and I will say that somebody that I think about also is my aunt. My mother's sister never had children, and I've always been very, very close with her. And she married an older man who is now well into his late 80s. And so I also think about her being alone and not having any children of her own to take care of her. So those are the two people who are primarily on my mind, is my mother and my aunt. I love them both. My mom and I have a hard relationship. You know, I also just want to acknowledge I don't have any answers, but as a first generation person, I was recently reading about something called Chancla culture, which is, the word Chancla means flip-flop in Spanish. And this term, I believe, comes from the Latinx community. And it's sort of, I don't know if it's appropriate to call it a joke, but I would joke that my grandmother would, like, follow me around when she was mad at me with her slipper in her hand to, like, throw it at me or to spank me. That I think a lot of first and second generation Americans are part of a very, I think, new to me conversation around how to balance maintaining a culture and cultural identity, but also put boundaries in place. And it's really hard when you feel obligated to take care of your family, but maybe being in very close proximity to the same family you feel obligated to doesn't feel super healthy for you. So I think that's pretty extreme. I can't say that I quite fit there, but my mother and I have definitely done a lot of sparring and have had a lot of challenges over what she expects from me, just because she's my mother and I'm her daughter, that really comes from the old country and from our Greek culture, and where, like, I draw the line. Like, a really simple one that I've probably joked about on the show is that, you know, in my mother's mind, she should be able to drop by my house at any time without warning, open the door, have her own key, come in, do whatever she wants to do in my house. And that really, really doesn't work for my personality.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of tension there where, like, me putting that boundary and saying that's not something that you can do really hurts her, because it's not just our personalities. It's a whole culture. It's what her mother did to her. It's what she saw her grandmother do, you know, in their home when she was a little girl. And I'm saying, no, you can't do this. So this idea of, you know, having spent so much time, a lifetime really, of drawing boundaries and negotiating and finally finding, like, this good spot. And now all of a sudden our parents are aging and we have to renegotiate the whole deal, because does my mom have to come live with me at some point? Like, I would never say no, but, like, what does that mean for me? Like, that's really deeply uncomfortable. Not because I don't want to care for her. I do very much. Not because I don't love her. I do very much. But, like, that just doesn't work so great. And it's scary thinking about having to be in the sandwich generation.
Yeah. And I can't wait to, like, bring this to the listeners group and have people share their experience. And, you know, of course, our email, our DMs always open. You can hit us up at hello@didn'tijustfeedyou.com. people who are of the sandwich generation, which I feel like we, that is, whether you identify as Gen X or millennial, I just had a weird, it was Gen X, not Gen Z. Whether you identify, whether you identify as Gen X or millennial, we are going to be caring for our aging parents at the same time that we're caring for like our teens and college students. And there's a financial burden, there's an emotional burden to all of that. Not everyone, whether it's like financial or emotional, is going to be able to take care of their family in the way that Laura is doing. So I would really love to hear like the other experiences of people where it's like, maybe you just on like, maybe financially you could, but like you own a tiny house and there's not a place for your parents and not to only live.
That our kids are among one of the first generations that isn't expected to do as well as us. So like, if your parents are aging and your kids are just leaving college or in their 20s, are they back home with you too? Yeah. Like, that's a lot of people. Oh my gosh.
We're going to need the bigger houses.
We're going to need bigger houses and much more patience.
And then there's like a whole affordable housing crisis. So it's just like really easy. It's really uncomplicated. Sandwiches. Delicious.
Just very excited to have a sandwich podcast. No, but for real, this time I really want to hear from our community. And I really hope, I'm going to say that we've had a couple of emails where people have said, oh, I looked at the title of the How We Feed and I thought that's not relevant to me. I'm not going to listen. And then somehow they did end up listening and they really felt like they got something out of it. It's weird to say this at the end of the episode. Obviously, you've listened this far, but hopefully you feel that way. And if you do, perhaps writing us a review or sharing the episode with a friend and saying you might skip this one or this might not be like the first place where you start, but I think you should listen to this one. Please let people know, because the How We Feed episodes are really for us about hearing stories. And we do try to glean as many like universal tips and tricks as we can out of the conversations. But we just really believe that hearing other people's story and somehow, you know, there'll be people out there who see themselves reflected in that story, even if not in its completion, and that that matters and that that makes a difference. So share these episodes.
We mentioned it a couple of times, but we would love to have you in our Didn't I Just Feed You listeners community. We hope that you've joined us there. If not, join for free at didntijustfeedyou.com/community. There you can get bonus episodes, the recipe subscriptions, so much more. So please feel free to join us there. And then you can keep in touch with us where we are on Instagram as at Didn't I Just Feed You or by signing up for our newsletter. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And like Stacey said, give us a rating, a review. They bring us joy. They help other busy home cooks find us. A huge thank you to our producer, Samantha Gatzik. I'm Megan.
And I'm Stacey. Stay sane and well-fed until next week.
Be sure to subscribe to Didn't I Just Feed You wherever you're listening. And don't forget to rate and review.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.